9 for the liability of carriers. Yes, we are absolutely in agreement. It's quite clear that if you look at subsection 1 of section 9, that it deals cross-border trafficking issues and carriers. It is indeed our recommendation that there should ideally be a separate section to define the position for internal carriers as well. And obviously, our suggestion would be that the drafters are in the best position to look at what they feel the elements should be ideally. We are of the opinion that as long as there is a provision to cater for internal carriers, it would be suffice. Taking into consideration another point, there is a clause, section 4 sub 2, that's already in place, that in some instances, even for carriers, the cross-border carriers, as it's been defined in section 9, you might be able to charge under section 4.2 if you can obviously prove all the elements of the offence taken granted. But in those instances where you are falling short, you will then obviously utilise 9.1, or if there's a subsection that deals with internal carriers, that would be the point. Regarding section 16, go to that.
It's not to have a debate on it. But look, you want a crime for internal carriers, then, and you're going to prosecute for that crime. I think you're in the best position as NCA, be plural, to come up with the elements of that crime.
Point taken.
So I would suggest that
we'll provide.
You know. I hear what you're saying. I'm sympathetic to it. I don't know about the rest of the committee, but presumably the same. But come with the elements. Don't expect drafts. You're the people who are prosecuting. It's flying up anyway.
Point taken. Thank you.
I just find it uncomfortable for the MPA to address the parliament trying to be prosecuted.
In any event, I won't be able to respond. I didn't hear the reply. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, since we are on this carrier, I could anticipate the question to my answer, so we focus on one section at a time. Anticipate the answer to my question.
It's section 9.
Yes. Two guys, same conductor. One gets nailed for 10 years, the other gets nailed for 1 year.
Can we park that point so that I can just maybe finish all the answers and then we can go back to your question? Thank you, sir. In relation to section 16, where the suggestion was by us that subsection 1 as it stands should be deleted, so to speak, and it should be replaced with subsection 2. But then, remember what we specifically suggested in relation to that the sole purpose of subsection 2 becoming subsection 1 would basically to ensure that the prosecution had a specific process in place that they can follow for those instances where they were unaware at that stage that they're dealing with a traffic victim. The position is in line with the sexual offences legislation that ideally, that's what we suggested, in subsection 2, it should be included as is, as it's been reflected in the Sexual Offences Act, finding for section 71.5. So that it's quite clear that if you are aware of the fact that the person has been trafficked, that has committed a crime as a direct result of being trafficked, there should not be any prosecution. Adding on to that, we also want to just mention the point that it is from outside our suggestion in relation to your point of subsection 1, that other state authorities should ideally be in the position to determine the status, say for instance, of victims that possibly were trafficked. And that as a recommendation should ideally be submitted to us so that it does not take away the discretion from the NPA to make the final call in that regard. Okay. In relation to the question on stats, always a sticky question, we will admit from the onset. But maybe, with all due respect, when I presented, you interpreted my misrepresentation in that regard incorrectly. What I said was that based on the methodology of stats collection that we have at the NPA at present, we have 30 cases, as someone indicated, up to January of 2011, from 2005, is the number one. That includes two cases on Section 71 of Act 32 of 2007. What I did say is that we know that other departments have got different numbers to what we say. We are not, cannot, unfortunately, be responsible for that because they use obviously maybe different methodology from what we use. But on the other hand, even for our statistics, I mean, yes, on Section 71 it's quite clear in relation to SORMA, Act 32 of 2007. There's a clear definition, so it is easily to trace if you do have cases in that regard. One, but we've only picked up two. But seeing that this piece of legislation has not been promulgated as yet, so the concept of trafficking cases is still, and the number of those cases is still at limbo, because there's misinterpretation of what's being regarded as trafficking, first of all, and if it is so underreported as many people are actually stating. But from our side, we're willing to say there are cities of which two falls within Act 32 of 2007, census, etc., promulgation law.
Clarity, I misunderstood you saying that you said other departments. I don't misunderstood you saying other prosecutors. But just to get clarity then, so there are 30 cases that were prosecuted.
Yes.
I mean, obviously there might be investigations by
the
police, etc.
Yeah.
We can accept that there might be different figures there, but you're quite clear from the court side, 30 prosecutions.
Yes.
Unless there were private prosecutions which don't fall under you, but I don't think there were any. It's 30 cases made into court.
And
whether they got thrown out, withdrawn, whatever, is something else, but 30 cases were in court.
And the methodology that we have to actually establish those 30 cases, quite a detailed performer that was developed by a colleague of us, so we can stand firm that those are the numbers that we have at this stage, well up to end of January at least.
Look, we have had some information from the NPA on some of those cases, but it would be useful getting more information in terms of how many convictions, how many withdrawals, if any,
for the
Where acquittals, or was it relating to problems with the law or problems with the evidence? If it's problems with the law, obviously that's what we're interested in, and could that problem have been corrected with the law?
Thank you. We'll do so.
To add to your list there, can you hear? Could you also give us details as to whether it involves one person or a whole group of people being trafficked? What in which case?
In relation to the 30 cases, we'll do for you. I've gathered so. I'm glad. In relation to a very good question, actually, for are we not over-regulating administrative and general provisions by means of several inspectoral committees? In pieces of different legislation. As the committee well knows, that we do have one already for child justice, there's one for sexual offences, and now there's another one being suggested. We've just checked for the Children's Act as well, but luckily there's not one suggested for the Children's Act. However, we obviously, of course, and it's our opinion that there should ideally be sort of like an umbrella overseeing, say, let's call it in sectoral committee, but focus of importance within that, where those committee members or, say, for instance, even if you call it an operational team, will have the responsibility of becoming a report to that intersectoral committee. Over and above that, we also have the opinion that the responsibility to ensure that the different pieces of legislation, what has been given to the different departments, should then be ideally be measured by this intersectoral committee that has sort of like an umbrella over function, instead of having these inspectoral service committees. And I might just add, from a personal viewpoint, I'm also part of the inspectoral committee for Charles Johnson. And unfortunately, as a practical challenge, it did happen in the past that you will have a certain decision being taken in that committee, but you're not part of the sexual offences one, and then there might be the possibility that it does not talk to one another, or there's no synergy between the different committees in decisions being taken. Now, it might not be vast challenges for the moment, but it might become quite a challenge at the later stage. So therefore, we feel that it would be far better if we had something like an umbrella intersectoral committee with those functions underneath that. Yes, I hope I've answered all your questions. If not, you're welcome to remind me. Professor, in relation to your question with the word soul, in the definition of removal of body parts, yeah, we had an interesting discussion on that. Quite an interesting. The only reason why we at the NPA feel that the word should ideally be removed is basically to ensure that the definition as it stands for removal of body parts would be simple and straightforward. We feel that the addition of the word soul, which also means exclusive, might add an additional burden in the definition, also when it's linked up with trafficking, that you might get a scenario that you are not in a position to prove, so to speak, the concept of soul. So that's just the reason why we suggest that it should be removed. Thank you. Dr. H, I'm over to your question. I will hopefully answer all of them. If not, please remind me if I've missed any of the questions. In relation to your interesting question that you had for sex workers and victims of trafficking, where we're dealing with basically two classes of citizens. Now, that's a sticky question, indeed it is, even for the NPA. But unfortunately, as you know quite well, and as the committee also know quite well, that we from the NPA side are basically in the position of an implementing agent. We've realized that there is a scenario that you might be in a position, and we've given quite a lot of thought about this, even when this piece of legislation was drafted, that there is a bit of an overlapping scenario in relation to sex workers, so to speak, and victims of trafficking that you might cause here an issue. We're at liberty to confirm that and in agreement with you. And that's basically the best answer that we can provide. I know it might not be answering your question to the point, but unfortunately that's the best that we can do in that regard. In relation...
Maybe supplementary. Okay, I also was relating the statement made by the Deputy Director General of the Department, saying we do not enforce the law. Now, obviously it's not for the Department to decide what to enforce and what not to enforce, but it is for you. And it is within your prosecutorial discretion of what to enforce and what not to enforce. And you can't enforce all the crimes. You can't catch all the speeders. So there is acceptance. So the question was there. Is it in fact correct that this criminalization is not being enforced? And that was unanswered. But the supplementary, when we passed the Refugee Act, a bunch of people who were illegal immigrants here, who did not speak the language, couldn't read any of our laws and regulations, all of a sudden they became immensely attuned to the possibility of the Refugee Act, and they all became asylum seekers. And the entire system collapsed. So that's very relevant for you. The entire system collapsed and hasn't recovered since, because there are all these asylum seekers and we must treat them as asylum seekers under international law. The analogy is not far-fetched, because we have an international treaty which creates on South Africa the obligation of assisting this category of people, the victims of trafficking, and therefore we are adopting this legislation. And that obligation goes on, you need to carry that obligation. You're part of that enforcement mechanism. Now, the foreigners couldn't read the language, it caught up immediately. One must draw the assumption that the sex workers will become equally attuned to the possibility that this legislation offers. And I think that it's a part of the regulatory impact analysis that, as far as the NPA is concerned, ought to be conducted on your side. I mean, the basic rule is all that which you subsidize, you get more of. So perhaps that's not for an answer, it's a comment, but there will be need to assess how that plays out as all these people, all of a sudden, will realize, without having known before, that they were all victims of trafficking.
Point taken. Thanks for that. Then once again, in relation to which is also linked to the question we had from Mr. Jeffries earlier on, that where we suggested that we, ideally there should be different state authorities that should investigate the status of victims of trafficking with a recommendation to invaders, but obviously also distinctly applies in this regard as well. Then in relation to section 8G, the question that was raised by conduct facilitating trafficking in person. I'm just reading my own notes, Mr. J, so that I'm not getting confused with what I scribbled down here. The idea that we had in mind here, and that was part of our recommendation to be absorbed in B, is to basically ensure that you cover the position for people that at the stage when property was leased or sub-leased, they were not aware of it, but subsequent to that they became aware. Now that is also in line with a similar provision, which is something that I've committed to say earlier on in the top of the list. Legislation as well in relation to racketeering as well by. And secondly, also it stipulates an additional point that property that's leased out but used for other criminal activities, you are in a position that that property can be forfeited, the owner of that property. So it was basically in line to bring that in sort of like in accordance with having a situation that you can also cover those people that at the stage when the property was leased and you're not in a position to intentionally prove that they had knowledge at that stage but subsequently became aware. That's why we felt that should be specifically catered for as well. In relation to section 10 with the extraterritorial jurisdiction, yeah, that's a good point that you raised, Dr. H. Paul. In some instances that we include certain parts in many pieces of legislation, and you, of course, you will know that extraterritorial jurisdiction is an issue that covers many other parts of legislation as well. But in this case, it was included, we would assume, and we're in agreement with that, and if it's established principle of law, but apart from that, it's also in line with the Palermo Protocol, the whole concept of extraterritorial jurisdiction. Am I saying this correctly? Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to confirm my colleagues at the back that I understood their input in this regard. So basically, we're in agreement that it's correctly placed. That's from an interest side, what you're saying. Then, do we need this legislation? Yes, certainly. Sorry.
The carrier?
Now, I wanted to go on to your next question, which you raised by saying, why do we need this piece of legislation? There are different answers for that question. And firstly, the most dominant reason would basically be to ensure that we have holistic legislation to deal with trafficking all in one umbrella piece of legislation. At the present stage, apart from common law offences that can also be utilised to cover trafficking, we have the Sexual Offences Act in 3207, and we also deal with the Children's Act
that also makes provision for trafficking of children. So you're talking at least of two separate pieces of legislation. That's leaving out the whole concept of organized crime, which FOCA legislation might also be used at this stage for organizing crime in relation to trafficking. So there's a third piece of statutory legislation in three pieces, over and above the common law. So we are in support from the NPA side that there should be holistic legislation, that you have one piece of document that will be able to deal with trafficking, traffic offences, so to speak, for this purpose. And that's also in line with the Palermo Protocol. I mean, that's correct. So it looks like Palermo Protocol is quite usable in this regard.
Supplementary on this, may I? You see, the Palermo Protocol tells you take care of this. I mean, it just creates an obligation. It doesn't call for a specific piece of legislation. If the issue is the data of lack of harmony, then we should address data by means of a nice little publication which puts everything together with a guideline. Or if we want to go to the next step, it should be a unified, consolidated text.
Point taken. Yeah, point taken. It's another option. Thank you. I want to move over to in relation to the question from the honourable member.
Sorry, my question on the carrier?
Sorry. But I thought we'd answered that one.
I'll be there.
Okay. So my colleague said at the back, answer the question. Thank you. Aaron? Can I maybe in the meantime move on with the next so that I can just have a look at that answer. Sorry for that, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In relation to the question from... Sorry? Yeah, indeed, sir. For Section 10 on public awareness. Yeah, point taken. We heard your input. Public awareness is a vital issue for us and our unit, and I'm talking from our unit, Sexual Offences Community Affairs, because we do have a specific component, basically in all five sections that we have in our unit that has a responsibility to deal with public awareness. So basically, we participate in all relevant activities in that regard. The issue is, however, that we feel that public awareness is not something that should be legislated. It's not something that should be in a piece of statutory legislation per se, because for the simple reason we feel that this is more a policy issue that can be dealt with far better in policy methodology. For instance, that's why we suggested the National Policy Framework, where it can be stated that all relevant departments that play a vital role in this piece of legislation will also have a vital responsibility towards public awareness. And you will remember when we earlier spoke about it, even if it's promulgated as piece of the intersectoral committee. But say, for instance, we move to a stage where we have an umbrella intersectoral committee, that they will then obviously have the responsibility to ensure, first of all, that there is synergy amongst all pieces of legislation, even when it comes to the public awareness function, which can be catered for in national policy framework. It might not be the answer that you want. You might see that I wanted legislation, a piece of legislation, so that I can go to somebody and say, the law says so. We hear that, and we're quite sensitive about that point too. That's why, but also on the other hand, it's not something that can be catered for in legislation, our viewpoint, and it should be ideally catered for in a national policy framework. With responsibility on each department, place the responsibility on the DGs, for instance, or whoever the heads of those departments are, to ensure that there's a public awareness function and responsibility in this regard. Thank you. Can we go back to the camera, please? Aaron? Oh, sorry.
I want to go out of this committee knowing that if that does not happen, what is it? Who must I contact? Because, you know, you may speak nicely in this room, very nicely too, but, you know, it may not happen. And it is not happening because I'm not aware of those consultations that you are talking about. I am a type of a politician who is very much on the ground, and I deal with women's issues. I have not come across that effort from yourself. And I want you to convince me that it will happen, because you see, without that happening, it undermines the very struggles that were put up in this country. The right of people to be safe.
Point taken. That's a good point. Again, if we look at, my response, Mr. Chair, again, if we look at what's been said by the National Policy Framework, say for a moment, let's park the argument and let's look at what's been said in Section 39.1 that says that places the responsibility on the minister after consultation with all the other relevant ministers, must adopt a national policy framework relating to all matters dealt with in this act in order to ensure a uniform, coordinated, cooperative approach by all government departments, organs of state and institutions in dealing with matters related to trafficking in persons, guide the implementation and administration of this act, and enhance service delivery as envisaged in this act by the development of a plan within available resources. For us, as we deliberated that will purely fall, for instance, to enhance service delivery, because ultimately with public awareness, you want to inform your public about what is law, what is not law, what are their rights, what they can do, what they can't, what they can expect, what they can't. And that is part of an effective and efficient service delivery system, which according to us can ideally be catered for with responsibility in the national policy system. Plus, you have an overseas committee which has a stand already in this piece of legislation is going to be, except that there's an umbrella one, an inspectoral committee, that will have that responsibility to ensure that, first of all, the policy framework is drafted with specific reference to, for instance, public awareness that ultimately needs to be implemented or delivered by the relevant department. I hope I've answered your question.
You have answered my question, and moreover, you have given me your contact details, because I'm going to organize committees when I leave here, and I want to see you there doing exactly what you were saying. Thank you.
With my head on the floor.
No, the thing is, Honorable Schopistole, if you read the clause that refers to the policy framework, they are not involved in it. It involves the Minister of Justice. And if you read it, nowhere does it say the Minister of Justice will go to the deep rural area and address the women folk in those deep rural areas. It says, amongst other things, he will develop the policy framework, publish it in the Gazette, and table it in Parliament, and after 3 or 5 years, review it, publish the review in the Gazette, table it in Parliament. That is what we would need to look at as a committee, and decide whether that suffices and should it be taken further. So just please bear that in mind. I don't want him going into the deep rural area. I want him to prosecute, and I want him to prosecute successfully, in fact, all of them. So if you say he must leave the courts and go into the deep rural areas, I'll have a serious problem with that. Because then who's going to be prosecuting in his absence?
No, no, sir, that is not what I'm saying. Is that the law? What I'm saying is that the law must make provision for such to happen. Who does it? It's not my worry. What I want is the end result, the awareness, all my people. Thank you.
You ready to respond to the question of Dr. S?
Thanks, Pia. I'm not sure, because when you're put in a position of scribing and telling people questions that have been asked, at times it becomes difficult, because I've written clarity on your question, because I don't know if I've captured it correctly. from my notes, there is that why is a carrier under the trafficking legislation get a stiffer sentence than the other carrier in other non-trafficking offences? Did I capture it correctly? And I said, look, we need clarity on that particular aspect, if I got it.
Okay, here we go again. And forgive me for not having been sufficiently clear. With your permission, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Clause 9. No requirement to know that the person you are carrying without a passport across a border is a victim of trafficking. So you've got two guys who do exactly the same thing. They are transporting across the border undocumented people. The one guy is transporting an illegal immigrant, the other one is transporting a victim of trafficking. The latter gets a much stiffer sentence than the former, yet their conduct is the same, their animus is the same, everything they do is the same. I think it's important for this to stand the review of constitutionality on basis of the equality clause. If we have stiffer sentences, the perpetrator must be aware, must have a specific intent of carrying somebody whom he knows to be a victim of crime, or a victim of trafficking, or at least he should have known, or ought to have known, that that was the case.
It's linked to having a, basically a new crime of carrying internal trafficking. Presumably that's going to have to involve, the elements of that crime are going to have to involve knowledge. The people you were carrying were being, the personal people you were carrying were being trafficked, which means that the cross-border trafficking crime would probably also have to be relooked at, having that element. Because I think as it is at the moment, I mean, lots of people may cross the border in vehicles, in carriers, without passports, without visas. And there's not necessarily a link with trafficking. So I think it answers it. I think you're going to have to look at that. You want to come back to us with the elements of the internal trafficking crime, but I think you're going to have to also relook at the elements of the international border trafficking crime, because I don't think you can have a situation where the domestic trafficking is knowledge that the people on board your vehicle are being trafficked, whereas the international one, the cross-border one, is you don't have to have that knowledge.
What I'm really saying is,
and it's maybe to try and help, is in terms of Dr. Ambrosini's point, maybe you should look at that element first and then see whether his question still remains. But Jeff, that's maybe just some additional, maybe more comments. I think it would be useful, I mean, we've had effectively a slide presentation from the NPA. What would be useful would be to get in an amendment to the bill form. And as I said with Clause 9, you're the NPA, you're prosecuting, you're best placed to know what the elements should be. But to indicate where you like a section, a clause, and you don't want us to change it because there may be representations for us to change it, it's useful for you to say as NPA, we like that, please don't change it. But where you've got amendments, then let's couch those as amendments to the bill. On the issue, maybe just one other thing with the city cases. Look, we did get again some information. The other element I forgot to mention was sentencing. What were the sentences where there were convictions, what were the sentences got, and if those sentences were unusually low, what were the reasons that the presiding officer gave for those low sentences, because as you know, one of the elements is the question of minimum sentencing. The other aspect is maybe just a general comment. I mean, it was also Ms. Vittoria's point. You know, we've had child justice, We regulate it quite a lot as far as administrative matters in child justice, even to the extent, I think, almost, I can't remember, of public education. That's been in for a year. Even though I'm personally not in favor of over-regulation, the experience wasn't necessarily that happy. I think including the NCA, I might be wrong, but you didn't come up with a deadline for you to come up with certain provisions, and I think you didn't, or you pushed it very late. So it I don't know, it's a balance we've got to I hear, for example, Mr. Torres' point of why legislate, and I hear your point why legislate for public education. But with the Child Justice Act experience, if you don't legislate, will it get done? You might think it's automatic, and you yourselves as NPA are I was going to say as much as fault, maybe that's unfair, but you are at fault as with other government agencies or departments. So maybe over-regulation is necessary. But definitely with Child Justice Chair, we set requirements had to be done by particular dates, and in a number of cases they were not done. I think the police were the worst. As I said, I might be being unfair to the NCA, but I think you missed the deadline, but anyway.
But we are due for a review, Mr. Bassett reminded me when we scanned the meeting.
Yeah.
That'll be on the anniversary of the law coming into effect, which is in April.
Yeah.
Maybe, Chair, before we finalise this bill, we should look at, because I think there is an overlap in terms of the sort of policy aspects, policy development, tax collection, aspects of child justice that we might be able to learn. I wouldn't want to say we delay the bill, but it would be useful to get something before we finalise the bill, even if we don't wait for the 1st of April. I'm particularly, obviously diversions are not relevant to this bill, but I'm thinking particularly of the policy development components, which are similar in part. It would be useful for you to choose 10 months now. Useful for you to look at and see. And then I think the last point was that presumably you will have somebody from the NCA in close contact with us, because we're making the law, making crimes, creating the elements of the crime, providing the sentencing. You're the people who we're then tasking, people, the public are tasking to implement. So it would be important that you have a bill that you are happy with, not a bill that you suddenly discover on the statute book.
I have indicated to Mr. Bassett, the gentleman behind you, I think you know Mr. Bassett,
yeah, good.
And, he'd indicated to me that much of the stuff that you've given us, they don't have a problem with, but maybe it's the best that I should just afford you an opportunity to briefly comment on the presentation we received today.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the department was involved in the initial discussions with the NPA in December. There are some aspects that have come to our knowledge once we got this document, and I've already had discussions with the NPA on some of those things. When we briefed the committee, I think it was last week or the week before, on the status of the various bills that you were dealing with, we also mentioned that we in the department are preparing working documents which include preliminary indications of the committee on what they would like to see in the various bills, and most of those indications have also been included in the working document that we have on trafficking, and some of them also indeed have the suggestions that have already been made by the NPA, because coincidentally lots of those recommendations also came from the committee. So we are ad idem in regards to a number of the issues. Perhaps I should just come to the public awareness. I'd like to remind committee members that they were of the view on a previous occasion that clause 3 is probably incorrectly placed in the bill and needs to come to the back of the bill. And I think that's what we need to have a look at, so that it will get attention, but possibly at another place in the bill where we're dealing with the national policy framework. The one area where I do have a bit of a concern about the recommendation of the NPA is section 300. And I understand why they're making that recommendation, but Mr. Smith did even go as far as to say that it might be problematic, because if you amend section 300, which deals with compensation that a criminal court can make for loss of property and damage to property, that's fine in ordinary criminal cases, but if you're sitting with a criminal court, court magistrate, if you want to amend section 300 to deal with all the requirements of the protocol, so that those benefits are for all victims of crime, we might have a problem. Similar calls have been made in the past that we amend section 300 along those lines, but those are when you're bringing your civil aspects in. So I thought I'd just mention that it could be problematic. We, in terms of the protocol, are required to have a provision relating to compensation for victims of trafficking, and that's what we try to do. And we haven't, therefore, amended or gone for an amendment of Section 300. But we can discuss that at a later stage as well. I just wanted to mention that. As far as Section 4.2 is concerned, it was highlighted that a person who 4.1 deals with the trafficking per se, and then 4.2 deals with who incites, promotes, recruits, encourages, and conspires. The penalty clauses there, I tend to agree with the NPA that we should bring it in line with what is in the Sexual Offences Act, because a person that conspires or encourages or procures another person to commit a crime is equally as bad and should be punished in the same manner. So we will have a look at that. On the intersectoral committees, that was also raised on a previous occasion by the committee. And it would be useful to get guidance, because we have given some consideration to how we should approach that. And it's difficult from a drafting point of view to have an umbrella body established in one piece of legislation that deals, for instance, with trafficking, but also talks about sexual offences and child justice. What our thoughts, preliminary thoughts to date, is to amend all three pieces of legislation. That's just one option. To say that there will be a national policy framework, but the details thereof will be spelled out in regulations. As I say, that's just an option to think about. Or perhaps to follow the approach that was followed in the Children's Act, and I might ask Ms. Stone to come in and assist here, where it was all dealt with on an administrative level. That was purely spelled out in that act, that there must be this coordination between role players and left it there. My feeling is perhaps we need to be more specific and leave it up to regulations. The advantage of that would be is that you could change what needs to be done far quicker than it would be to do in terms of primary legislation. Mr. Jeffrey said that the NPA must propose specific amendments and come back to this committee. We intended, in terms of our working document, to follow up on the presentation that's been made today. There are some aspects that we would like to engage them on, and we undertake to meet with the NPA and to come back to this committee with them on the amendments that you would like to see. I've just made notes of those aspects as we've gone along. I don't know whether you want to hear on any other specific aspects.
still think it was, well, it would be good for you to engage, the department to engage with the NPA, but I think we need to see the NPA amendment. So in other words, still engage with them if you want to see an amendment document rather than a mediated amendment document. See what I mean? You can then take those comments that exist in the dispute between yourselves and the department. We want to know about it rather than having it buried in bureaucracy, as it were, on between the two of you. That was one. Then I think on the issue of the multi-sectoral committee, yeah, I mean, I think what we would be looking at is amendments in the schedule to child justice, to sexual offences, to create that. And I think that I'm probably adopting different positions. But technically, I suppose on the one hand, ideally, you shouldn't have to regulate. But as you know, I think, Mr. Bassett, I think you came with us to Port Elizabeth for the Child Justice, that Child Justice Centre, okay? But I mean, Port Elizabeth, you've got a set-up Child Justice Centre, as opposed to Bloemfontein, which has an informal one there, there was a building built and everything. And I don't know, I hope it's improved, but Port Elizabeth was not good. They were not talking to each other, they were suing each other. So I think we had to provide in the bill that there's a manager and this is what they must do. I mean, unnecessary things as far as I'm concerned. But the problem was that informally in Bloemfontein, where they just sort of got together and set up the thing and were working quite well at that point, hopefully they still are, at PE, where a centre was built and they were not able to get on with each other. I think it was education was doing justice or the other way around, I can't remember. We had to then write it into legislation. So I think the issue is that unfortunately it would be better to specify what needs to be done, to leave the flexibility, but to specify broadly what needs to be done and the deadlines. So for example, as you know, with child justice, there were meant to be different policy documents in place by a particular date specified in legislation, and those policies were not in place. And if we hadn't have had it, I mean, the Schaefer was privately raising, well, what's the point, because people never kept to it. But at least having it in legislation means there's a requirement of parliamentary oversight. I think we were better off than if it hadn't been there. So really what I'm saying is definitely we can't in the trafficking bill set up a multi-sectoral committee that will deal with trafficking and child justice, but that can be dealt with in the schedule in terms of amending those bills. And the department, the NPA, the police can best work out how that should be framed, but I would have thought one umbrella body at senior level, the DG of justice, the commissioner of police, etc. And then under that, subcommittees that report. And some kind of mechanism in place to ensure that if there's a discussion that takes place at the trafficking level, it may be different people involved in sexual offences, but there's a flow of information. And then as far as the guidelines and the requirements about what is being done, we need a balance between specifying in legislation what we as the legislature want, and dates by which we want it, and then there can be more detailed regulations. But if we can't have too much open to regulations, because our suspicion with respect of the officials of the department would be that it might not get done. That would also probably apply to the NPA, unfortunately.
Thank you, Chair. That was very useful. That gives us guidance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Forgive me, Mr. Chairman, for being a constitutional purist, but these little things are important to me. Because you spoke for half an hour. I don't think the MPA, I find that the MPA comes to you, answer questions, supply information that it has, as any organ state could do. But the MPA is a particular state under the Constitution. It's almost a separate branch of government. in many countries is construed as part of the judiciary. I think it's highly improper for us to require them to produce policies. If they draft any proposal of legislation, they will be producing policies. We cannot get a draft from the MPA directly. If they want to do it behind closed doors, they give it to the department, and it comes to us from the department. But I think that that's the proper channel. The MPA is the mouth of the, I mean, it's the arm of the law as much as the judiciary is the mouth of the law. It shouldn't be the, should have any, should not have anything to do with drafting the law.
I like others, I must disagree with you. It's not like they're imposing the draft, you know. It's we are asking them to present us with a draft. And ultimately, we have a final say as to whether we accept or refuse or reject that draft. So, technically, you may be correct. I have serious doubts that you are. But, well.
No, they're not. They're in many countries, of course they're not. I told you, you know, you're...
I would just like to request, maybe based on the request that we received, to submit the amended provisions for the committee guide on a timeline, and they would like this document for months. What are some things? It's difficult. But it must be fine?
No.
Is that too long? Okay. Too long. 2 weeks?
It's a balance. I mean, some of it is quite easy, but for example, Clause 9 is going to be quite difficult.
Yeah.
And where I disagree with Dr. Ambrosini is your... it's not as if, you know, for us to ask the judges to draft law would be incorrect, yeah. Criminal law. But you're the people who are implementing, you're prosecuting. It's important, I think, for us to know what elements you feel would be important. Whether we accept it or reject it is up to us, but let's hear what you have to say. So you don't have a situation where we make a crime, create a crime, a statutory crime, and you, the implementers, the people who have to prosecute, have no clue what we were trying to do, and you therefore have great difficulty in trying to prove it, and nobody then gets convicted under it. So that's what one wants to avoid. And then I think on the carrier, I can see it's going to take longer because it's a question of this element of knowledge of trafficking is something I think you've got to grapple with, and that will take you some time. But yeah.
Chair, just as that might be relevant for the time frame that we're looking at, just to remind committee members that we've still got to do deliberations on the book and clause 17 to the end. So, you know, that the committee could deal with those aspects while the MPA is busy with.
Maybe since I've got traffic fines or something, and I'm hoping that somebody from the NPA will be sympathetic to me. No, that's dropped. Delete that. No, maybe just I don't want to say, look, 2 weeks, and then we actually haven't completed. Maybe we should give them, because this clause 9 is complicated. It's not, and I don't want a situation where they bring us something from one person or two people which hasn't been thought through by the rest, and it then is of no use. So I would suggest if I mean, remember, we'll be going, you know, I would have thought maybe if they can bring us the rest in 2 weeks, and if you need more time, if you can complete clause 9, fine, but if you can't, you can have a bit more time for clause 9. I just think some sort of leniency on it, but I don't want a situation where they rush something on clause 9 and it's not properly thought through. I must be honest, I don't think your presentation on clause 9 here was properly thought through. You could have done more work on it. So do more work on it and come back to it.
If you complete the others and you find that you need a little more time with mine, then we'll consider that. Is there anything else? Thank you.
Seems that we have reached, come to the end of the presentation. You know, I'm a Sangan woman. I usually, when people visit us, when they go away, you give them some provision, you know. I just want to give you a piece of information. The first president of the United States in 1918 came to this conclusion that it is in the nature of human beings that unless they are made to account, they will not account. That is why I've got that worry that there should be something in black and white that compels South Africans to actually go down to the ground. Thank you.
Well, honorable members, it seems like we've come to the end of our day's work. And in that case, it leaves me to say thank you to all of you. Thank you for your presentation. You've given us food for thought. And we look forward to those amendments. And I'm sure they'll help us tremendously, notwithstanding Dr. Ambrosini's skepticism. And to you, honorable members, thanks for your input and your presence today. We're adjourned. Mm-hmm.